one of the special qualities of the Buddha that we recite when we do the puja is teacher of gods and humans, and another quality is supreme trainer of people to be tamed. So this is these are two of the unique qualities of the Buddha, that he had the ability, if someone had any chance of understanding the Dhamma, any chance of giving up attachments, developing wholesome qualities, then he would know exactly the right way to help that person. We also know that he taught people from all walks of life, from all parts of society. He taught people who were very powerful, people who were not, kings, ministers, as well as beggars on the street, people with very low status in the world. So the sermon that we'll listen to tonight, someone calls into question this, his teaching methods. So this discourse can be found in the Sanyutta Nikaya, the Connected Discourses. So this book, where the sermons are divided into different topics. So the topic of this chapter are discourses given to householders, given to headmen, so leaders of a village. So it begins, on one occasion the Blessed One was dwelling at Nalanda in Pavarika's mango grove. Then Asibantakaputta, the headman, approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side, and said to him, "Venerable Sir, doesn't the Blessed One dwell compassionate towards all living beings?" And the Buddha replies, "Yes, headman, the Tathagata dwells compassionate towards all living beings." And so we don't know the motivation behind why he went down this road, but Asibandhakaputta says to the Buddha, "Then why is it, Venerable Sir, that the Blessed One teaches the Dhamma thoroughly to some, yet not so thoroughly to others?" So what we know about this location, the city of Nalanda, it was in the southern region that the Buddha taught in. So he spent a lot of time going between the city of Rajagaha in the south and Savatthi in the north. And this the city of Nalanda was a little bit smaller than Rajagaha. It was a little ways north of Rajagaha. And in particular, it was the main headquarters of a rival sect led by the Nigantha Nathputta. So many times we have conversations going on between the Buddha and disciples of the Nigantha Nathputta, where actually, Nathputta sends his disciples to ask kind of tricky questions to the Buddha to try and catch him in a lie or to somehow embarrass him. So that went on a lot in this town, because many of the people that lived there were followers of this rival sect, although there were also lots of disciples of the Buddha. So we don't know if this was one of those missions that someone got sent out to challenge the Buddha or to embarrass the Buddha. But maybe it was just an honest question that he saw that the Buddha spent a lot of time talking to his own monks and nuns, and not so much time talking to disciples of other teachers. So the Buddha asks him a counter question, and this is another one of the Buddha's techniques in teaching. Sometimes he would give a detailed analysis of the question that was asked. Sometimes he would ask a counter question. Sometimes he would just give a very short answer. And sometimes he would say nothing at all. That under those circumstances, he knew that the person that asked the question, that no matter how he answered, the person would twist it up in his mind. That the person just had too many wrong assumptions, and that they were asking about something that was too deep, and so no matter how the Buddha answered, the person would get confused. So sometimes the Buddha was silent, didn't answer a question. So when you ask questions, when you ask the monks questions and we don't give you an answer, know that that's a technique sometimes. Sometimes we just don't know the answer and we'll tell you. But sometimes a question is just so poorly formed that we don't answer. And another way that the Buddha would answer, sometimes he would restate the question, like saying, well, you know, if you ask the question that way, I can't really give you a good answer, but let's ask the question this way. And then we can come up with a very straightforward answer. So in this situation, the Buddha asked a counter question. So he said, well then, headman, I will question you about this. Answer me as you see fit. What do you think, headman? Suppose a farmer here had three fields, one excellent, one of middling quality, and one inferior, rough, salty, with bad ground. What do you think, headman? If that farmer wishes to sow seed, where would he sow it first? In the excellent field? In the field of middling quality? Or in the field that was inferior, the one that was rough, salty, with bad ground? So three fields, a perfect one, one that was not so good, but not so bad, and then a really bad plot of land. So the headman, Asibandhakaputta, replies, if, venerable sir, that farmer wishes to sow seed, he would sow it in the excellent field first. Having sown seed there, he would next sow it in the field of middling quality. Having sown seed there, he might or might not sow seed in the field that was inferior, the one that was rough, salty, with bad ground. For what reason? Because at least it could be used as fodder for the cattle. So it was an easy question for him to answer. And so using that same idea, the Buddha says, okay, that's how it is with me too. He says, headman, just like the field that is excellent are the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, so the monks and the nuns. Just like the field that is excellent are the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis to me. I teach them the Dhamma that is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, with the right meaning and phrasing. I reveal the holy life that is perfectly complete and pure. For what reason? Because they dwell with me as their island, with me as their shelter, with me as their protector, with me as their refuge. So he says, you know, I have these different plots of land as well, that my disciples who have given up their regular lives, committed themselves to a life of simplicity, a life of dedication to learning and meditation and training. Those I teach first. And we know that the Buddha spent a lot of time talking to his monks and his nuns. And here he describes the Dhamma that he teaches. So when we do the pujas, we recite individual qualities of the Dhamma. But the qualities that he says here is another way that people describe the Dhamma. Sometimes they'll describe it using both sets. So he says, to them, I teach the Dhamma that is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end. So this is a common way that the Dhamma is described. It's not really a technical definition. We don't have a technical definition for that. But we can clearly see that the things that the Buddha teaches us, when we start to practice them, they're beneficial, right? That he especially teaches things that start us gradually. We learned about that last week, I think. This notion of a gradual training. It was in the retreat, actually. So we start to practice the five precepts, and right away we see the benefit. We see that right away we can live without regret, that we can have a happy mind, remembering that we're someone who gives up unwholesome behavior. We can practice generosity, and right away get that good feeling that comes from helping others, right? So we don't start to practice those things and get no benefit from them. That in fact, right away, we get benefit from those things. Even from just a little bit of meditation, we can experience benefit. Someone comes and they've never practiced loving-kindness meditation before. They sit down and right on the spot can experience, right? I can direct my mind in a certain way, and when I do that, it's pleasant, right? It's not something that we have to wait to get the benefit from. It's good in the beginning, good in the middle, good in the end. So as we practice these teachings more and more, we see even deeper and deeper changes, deeper and deeper benefits, right? Things that we might have thought would be impossible for us to do become very natural, right? Maybe we've experienced loss earlier in our life, and we dealt with it very poorly because we didn't have any training in seeing the danger in attachments. But then as we practice more and more, we experience loss, and it's not quite so painful, right? It's painful, but yet we can stay afloat. We don't get totally overwhelmed by it. We can fall back on that training that we have, that yes, these things that I like, I have to be separated from. Right? So even not even having reached the end of the path, we get this benefit from the teachings. And then, of course, in the end, it's good. Because in the end, it it lays to rest all of our problems, all of our craving, all of our anger, all of our delusion. So this is one of the very important qualities of the Buddha's teaching, that it's not something that we have to invest a lot of time in before we see any benefit from it. Right? With the right meaning and phrasing. So it's explained in a way that's correct and that's useful to us. He says, I reveal the holy life that is perfectly complete and pure. So, this is another excellent quality of the Buddha, excellent quality of the Dhamma, that he's set up this this course of training that's very harmless, right? The life of monks and nuns, it doesn't hurt anyone, right? If lived properly, right? Monks and nuns can not follow the training and hurt people, of course, hurt themselves most of all. But that when followed, we can't find a complaint to have about it. That it's that the Buddha saw all the ways that our mind can go off track and laid down training to help with all those things. So the Buddha says, because they dwell with me as their island, with me as their shelter, with me as their protector, with me as their refuge. So he knows that his monks and nuns look to him for help, that they respect him as the teacher, that they want to learn and they want to practice what it is that he has. So it's very natural that the Buddha would want to teach them, right? Nobody likes to teach people who aren't interested. It's just a normal thing, right? And when people weren't suitable to be taught, the Buddha wouldn't, you know, he wouldn't teach. Then the Buddha goes on to say, then, headman, just like the field of middling quality, are the male and female lay followers to me. To them, too, I teach the Dhamma that is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, with the right meaning and phrasing. I reveal the holy life that is perfectly complete and pure. For what reason? Because they dwell with me as their island, with me as their shelter, with me as their protector, with me as their refuge. So, the Buddha says, in the same way, I teach the Dhamma to my male and female lay disciples, because they also go to me for refuge. They're interested in hearing the training. But still, he describes them as the middle field, right? So he doesn't say this to insult them, right? To say that that he doesn't care about them, but he understands that it's very hard to practice these very deep teachings when we're living a lay life, right? And this is something that's important to remember and keep in balance for lay Buddhists, because it's very difficult to practice, right? It's difficult to practice even as monks or nuns, right? Giving up attachments is not easy. But when we don't have ideal conditions, it's even harder, right? To, you know, when a monk or a nun sees that they're starting to get attached to the lay people around, or the alms food that's being offered, or any number of things, they can pick up their robe and bowl. Maybe they have some books nowadays, pack them up, and fly away. The Buddha said, gave a simile like a bird, right? Whenever it wants to go somewhere else, it just lifts its two wings and flies away. So in the same way, monks and nuns, they should be able to pick up their robes, pick up their bowls, and fly away. And that's not something that lay people can do, right? You can't just pick up and fly away. People, a lot of the folks that come here are new to Canada, and so they end up moving around a bit, right? Renting a place here, renting a bigger place here, maybe eventually buying a house, and there'll be a few weeks where they disappear, and afterwards monks find out, oh yes, they moved to a new place, and they come and they say, oh, Bhante, this is the third time we've moved, and when we went to pack things, we found boxes that we hadn't even unpacked from the last time that we moved. We had so much stuff. We've only been here 5 years and we have so much stuff, right? And I say, yes, I know. That's what happens, right? That's what happens. That's why lay life, you have to collect things, right? Maybe not as much as people actually end up collecting, but, right, you have responsibilities that you have to take care of, right? You have to think about, what's going to happen in the winter, what's going to happen in the future, how can I protect my family, right? And there's so many distractions, right? And even, don't think that nowadays is different. Even in the time of the Buddha, people got distracted. They would come to him and he would say, oh, I haven't seen you for a long time. What's been happening? And they say, oh, so busy. So many things to take care of, right? It's normal. It's a normal thing, right? That it can be hard to dedicate the amount of time that we want to meditation, to study, to practicing generosity, to helping other people, right? Very difficult. So it's important that as lay disciples, there's this recognition that we're on the right path, that we have responsibilities, that we have duties, right? All things that are good karma, right? Looking after parents, looking after children, having a good occupation. But many of these ideals are going to be very hard to reach, right? Even to have the opportunity to practice the 8 precepts for a day. Some people, it's very hard for them to find the time to do that. And so, as we learn about very deep Dhamma, as we learn about the qualities of highly developed spiritual people, that we understand not to judge ourselves thinking, ugh, I haven't accomplished anything. Right, I've been trying to do this for so many years, and yet still I get angry. Right, still I'm greedy for things. Right, that's not using the teachings in the right way, because the Buddha says, even to the lay people, I teach them about the holy life, perfect and pure. Right, not so lay people will think, I don't measure up to the monks and the nuns. Look at how attached I am, right? In a negative way. Not for that reason, but so that lay people can know. Look at what's possible. Even the skillful way that the Buddha teaches to use that knowledge is to say, okay, monks and nuns, they follow hundreds of precepts. Let me at least keep these 5. Right? Because if all we know about is the 5 precepts, if all we understand is sort of this basic level of virtue, then we start to get content with that. Or we maybe don't even follow it so well, thinking, well, at least I keep 3 precepts, or at least I keep 4 precepts, or at least I keep them most of the time, right? But to think, okay, there have been people who have dedicated their whole lives to this teaching. Let me at least try a little bit harder. Let me at least meet the standard that the Buddha set for his lay disciples. Right? And that when we learn about these exalted individuals, we use that knowledge to develop our confidence in what's possible, our confidence in the Buddha's enlightenment, our confidence in the Sangha, right, who developed these qualities. So that there's always something that we can look up to, heroes that we can have, right? That when we see ourselves being kind of stingy, we can think about great acts of generosity that have been practiced. When we see irritation and annoyance coming up in the mind, instead of thinking, well, at least I didn't yell at them, right? Instead of thinking, at least I didn't hit them, we think, okay, you know, Arhat Sariputta, even people attacked him physically, and he didn't get angry. Even Arhat Moggallana, you know, he was beaten to a pulp, but he didn't have any thoughts of anger for those people. Right? Let me try to not even get irritated at this little thing that someone's doing to me. Right? Then the Buddha says, "Headman, just like that field that is inferior, rough, salty, with bad ground, are the ascetics, Brahmins, and wanderers of other sects to me. Yet, to them too, I teach the Dhamma that is good in the beginning, good in the middle, and good in the end, with the right meaning and phrasing. I reveal the holy life that is perfectly complete and pure. For what reason? Because if they understand even a single sentence, that will lead to their welfare and happiness for a long time." So many times when the Buddha is having conversations with people who were followers of another teacher, part of another sect, they would ask him about something and he would say, "You know, it's really hard for you to understand because you're attached to these other ideas. You're holding on to these other views so strongly. It's hard for you to understand these deep teachings." So we know that the Buddha had this knowledge of people's minds. But he also knew that someone, even understanding just a few words of Dhamma, beautiful verse from the Dhammapada, that, you know, even just a single verse of Dhamma can be extremely powerful, can make someone change their lives around completely, can prevent someone from doing something that hurts themselves or hurts other people. So he says, even to those people who are not my disciples, who don't come to me as a teacher, who don't treat me respectfully, who don't give their whole attention to the Dhamma when it's being preached, even to those others, I teach this Dhamma so that they can maybe benefit just a little bit. Just even having a positive thought about wholesome qualities. Right? And it's true, we see that while the Buddha does teach a lot of deep Dhamma to his monks and nuns, many times he teaches the very same things to lay people, to people that are part of other sects. That we definitely don't see that the Buddha like taught one Dhamma for the monks and nuns and another for the lay people. Like, that's definitely not what happened. There, when he saw that lay people needed, you know, certain teachings related to lay life, to household life, then he would go right in for that. When lay people would come to him and say, "Yep, we like nice things. We like nice clothes. We like delicious food. We like to have this house full of children. Give us something. Give us some teaching." Right? He gave them a teaching that was appropriate. when he was teaching the monks, sometimes he would teach them things related to lay life, right? Because when monks and nuns are reminded about the dangers of lay life and the difficulties of lay life and the way that lay life can go off track, right, then it strengthens that resolve for monastic practice. And it also allows the monks and nuns to teach to the lay people. So anyone who tells you that Theravada Buddhism is just for the monastics, right, or that the Buddha didn't have anything to offer to lay people, it's totally rubbish, right, that we see him again and again teaching all kinds of Dhamma to all kinds of people. Because he knows that even understanding just a little bit can be transformative, can be beneficial. So then he gives another simile. He says, suppose, headman, a man had three water pots, one without cracks, which does not let water seep through and escape, one without cracks, but which lets water seep through and escape, and one with cracks, which does let water seep through and escape. What do you think, headman? If that man wants to store water, where would he store it first? In the water pot that is without cracks, which does not let water seep through and escape? Or in the water pot that is without cracks but does let water seep through and escape? Or in the water pot that has cracks, which lets water seep through and escape? So again, like the fields, different grades of pots. One that's perfect, that can hold everything in completely. One that's perfect but lets some things slip out. And one that has cracks in it that's clearly not a good pot. So, again, the headman, Asibandha Kaputta, says, if, Venerable Sir, that man wants to store water, he would store it first in the water pot that is without cracks, which does not let water seep through and escape. Having stored water there, he would next store it in the water pot that is without cracks, but which lets water seep through and escape. Having stored it there, he might or might not store it in the water pot that has cracks, which lets water seep through and escape. For what reason? Because it can at least be used for washing the dishes. So then the Buddha says the same thing that he said before. He says, in the same way to my monks and nuns, I teach the Dhamma. That's good in the beginning, good in the middle, good in the end, with the right meaning and phrasing, perfectly pure and complete. Why? Because they've gone for me to refuge. They have me as their island. They have me as their protector. They know that whatever difficulties that they may have, my teachings have something to offer. That whatever defilements can arise in the mind, whatever mental problems that we can have, we can never think that the Buddha didn't have a solution for that. Right? It may not be a simple solution, but that whatever greed we can have, whatever hatred we have, whatever ways we try and justify these problems in the mind, right? The Buddha always had a teaching that could help us overcome. It's just up to us to learn those teachings, right? We don't have the good fortune of being able to go to the Buddha and explain our problem and have the perfect thing for us given. But still, we go for refuge to the Buddha. We seek his assistance. And then the Buddha says, in the same way with the water pot it's not broken, but things tend to leak out a little bit. He says, I teach to my lay disciples, right? He understands that for the lay disciples, things are going to leak out a little bit. It's going to be difficult to hold all these things in, right? For the monks and nuns, we have this life that's designed, right, to help us overcome our attachments, that, you know, we can't dream about, you know, different clothes or different haircut, or, right? We have these limitations placed on us, these boundaries laid down that help us keep, you know, help us keep the training in. We can, you know, we can mess things up. We can, you know, dream about a nicer robe, right? A sharper razor, right? We can, humans can mess up anything, but at least we know that we have this solid container. But still, the Buddha, out of compassion, he still teaches the Dhamma to lay people. He knows that that it's possible to become a stream enter, that it's possible to give up a lot of these problems in the mind that lead to unhappiness here and now. And so he teaches the Dhamma. He knows that his lay disciples will listen, will take it seriously, will trust in those things that they can't see for themselves, right? Because the Buddha's teachings are full of insights that he was able to have that we just can't see directly at first. But he knew that his own lay disciples, they would trust him. They would say, "Yeah, I don't have psychic powers. I've never met someone with psychic powers, but why would the Buddha lie about that? Like, why would he make that up?" So he knows that his lay disciples, he can teach the Dhamma to without holding back. And then he says, just like the water pot that has cracks, that lets water seep through and escape, are the ascetics, Brahmins, and wanderers of other sects to me. But still, he says, I teach them the Dhamma. Right? Good in the beginning, good in the middle, good in the end. Why? Not because they're my students, not because they trust me, but because maybe something will click. Maybe they'll think in their mind, yes, I've seen that's true. I've seen, you know, because some sects, they believed that physical karma was the strongest karma, that mental karma was very subtle, but like doing something with our bodies, killing with our bodies, even unintentionally. That was a view that the Nigantas had, that even to... actually, they didn't have that view, but still they viewed bodily actions as the most important, right? And that the mind, it was just very subtle. It was not like... That the action of killing, that's obviously something very serious. Everybody can see that. But the mental action of hatred, it's just mental actions. Doesn't really result in so much. But the Buddha, even to them, explained, right, how even though the mind was very subtle, that the things that we do with our mind have very serious consequences. And so maybe they're sitting there listening and thinking, yeah, you know, I can tell that when I get angry at my companions in the holy life, it totally destroys my mind. Totally not able to meditate. It leads me to say things and do things that I regret. So maybe just that little bit, that doubt that can be cast on their own views is enough to help them, enough to help them give up their wrong views or attachments. And so when the wanderer Asibandhikaputta heard this, he was very happy, right? Because he heard from the Buddha that the Buddha recognized these different types of people, that there's different types of people in the world, but yet still the Buddha did teach to all of them. Right? Maybe when people that there was no benefit to teaching to, he didn't teach as much, but that still he was willing to share everything. The way the Buddha describes his teaching is, he says, I'm not a teacher with a closed fist. Because many teachers, they won't say everything. Right now everything's on the internet, so it's a little different situation. But those days, the only way that you could learn something was from a teacher. And if you wanted to learn a skill or a craft, you had to work with a teacher. And maybe that teacher would kind of hold things back, because they knew that if they gave away everything, then that, you know, that artist or that craftsperson, then they could become a competitor, right? And so the teacher would hold some things back until they really had confidence in the student. Or maybe they would hold things back, thinking, well, I'll just give them little bit by little bit, and they'll have to pay me, you know, they'll owe me something each time, and so I'll keep some things back. Or maybe I'll not tell anybody some of my secrets, because I want to maintain that control, that power over them. But the Buddha said, I teach with an open hand. And many times you can find a Buddha statue with his hand out like this, open, giving the Dhamma, not keeping secret teachings, right? In all the variety of spiritual things that are out there, you know, there's different courses that you can take, and they talk about, you know, the first level and the second level and the third level, and unless you go all the way through and pay all the money, right, you don't get the final teachings, right? But the Buddha wasn't like that. If someone came to him and asked a question about very deep Dhamma, and he thought that there was even a chance that they could understand, or that they wouldn't hurt themselves with the knowledge, he would share it to them. He wouldn't say, well, you're not a monk, you're not a nun. Actually, there were a few times that he said that. He said, I won't teach you that until you become a monk. But those were special situations where he knew that person wouldn't be able to understand it unless they became a monk. That once they ordained, they would be able to dedicate themselves completely to practice. Right? So there's very, very small situations like that. But in general, the Buddha always taught with an open hand. So when Asibandhika heard this, he said, excellent, excellent. You know, the Blessed One has taught the Dhamma to me in many ways, has turned upright what was turned over, uncovered what was hidden, given a lamp in the darkness for people with eyesight to see. And he went for refuge to the Buddha, to the Dhamma, and the Sangha. Right? So we don't know what his motivations were for coming and asking these questions, but we know that he listened carefully, that he took those teachings in, and he was delighted with what the Buddha had to say. So now that we've had the chance to hear these similes, to hear the Buddha's understanding of the different people that he taught to, may we also keep these teachings in mind. May we reflect on them wisely. May we remember these qualities of the Dhamma that the Buddha taught. May we remember the qualities of the Buddha himself and the way that he was able to teach. Through the power of this remembering, through the power of practicing these teachings, may we too one day for ourselves experience the supreme bliss of Nibbana in this Gautama Buddha's dispensation. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.